to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. We are live from the most beautiful city in the country. Personally, I think in the world, Houston, Texas. And I just want to welcome you tonight to what's going to be a program that I promise you, this is a money back guarantee tonight. And if it doesn't blow your socks off, something's wrong with your socks. And it's just going to be awesome. We have the next 3 or 4 weeks, some of the best guests that I believe that are in the country right now. And this one, the guests tonight have, I've been excited about them. I did a pre-interview that I typically don't do, a kind of a pre-get to know them. And it was just like, wow, we connected. There was so much love in the room and just like, wow, we're all on the same bandwagon. And it was just wonderful. So I just can't wait to introduce you to our guests tonight. I want you to write down a couple things, if you would. On March 7th. No, the next week on February 28th, we have Adrienne Ruan, and she is a domestic abuse trauma recovery specialist and a TEDx speaker. And she is going to be awesome, well-known all around the country, one of the most well-known people on domestic abuse. And she's going to be with us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time. And then mark this down on your calendar on March 7th. I'm so excited about this. J.I. Douglas, a 10-year-old author, is going to be with me. So I'm just so excited about getting to interview a 10-year-old girl that has just written a book on what it feels like to be bullied, how to handle that and the stress and overcoming that, and how she wants to help the world now with her beautiful book of innocence of what impact bullying had on her and how she made it through. And she's going to be our guest on March 7th. And then on March 14th, Rebecca Ferguson, another author that I met a week or two ago during the interview that she was on a panel with, and her story is unbelievable about her journey in life. And so the next 3 weeks, just stay with us and have some awesome things we're going to be sharing with you in the next couple weeks of what's coming up in the latter part of March. And I'm really, really excited about too. But 888-627-6008 is the number that I want you to call. And Curtis is on the Facebook Live watching. If you don't want to call and you're kind of scared about being live to around the world speaking, you can get on our Facebook, Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page, and comment or ask questions there. And at the last segment, he'll come on and say, hey, Dad, this is what we have for our guest. You know, we had Georgette on a week or two ago, and I loved her story, loved her book, her memoir about foster care and how the system dealt with her. These are some of her peeps that she works with, that she does business with. And before we bring them on, everything in life affects everything in life. And I know that's not a very profound statement, but just think about it. Everything that happens to you, whether it's you as a child, a teenager, a 20-year-old, 30-year-old, whatever happened to people in Houston this past week with water and ice and freezing weather and rain, you're just terrible week, and people are still trying to come out of that. If you've been traumatized previously in life, what you're dealing with today affects how you're going to handle what's going on tomorrow and how things deal with you. So I want to preface that with that information that I believe that we endure things, experience things that we can actually use to help people in their lives. Mm. And listen to who we have on the show tonight. Jennifer Jacobs and Jessica Stern. Jennifer Jacobs is a chief executive officer, a CEO. I always wanted to be CEO, but a CEO officer and co-founder of Connect Our Kids, a nonprofit, using technology and data to improve the outcomes of children in foster care. Now listen to this. Prior to even finding this Connect Our Kids, Jennifer was a fellow and distinguished analyst in Homeland Security Studies in the Analysis Institute. I don't even, probably couldn't even figure out how to get in the front door of that place, but of Homeland Security Studies and Analysis Institute. While she was there, she led teams of analysts in understanding and improving complex systems and processes within the federal government, particularly around nuclear non-proliferation and border control. That was her life. She was a White House fellow, class of 2005 and 2006, serving within the National Security Council. And there's a whole bunch more to that story, but she served on active duty in the U.S. Army as a military police platoon leader and a jump master at Fort Bragg. And she also served in the U.S. Army Reserve as a team leader, a unit commander, a general's aide, and a nuclear operations officer. Now, how does that fit in with what we're going to talk about tonight? Hang on to your socks. Then we have Jessica Stern. She's a COO and co-founder of Connect Our Kids, born and raised in St. Mary's, Ohio, and she lived with the foster family as a young girl. One of eight children, Jessica has a great interest in reducing trauma and family separations. Because of these two individuals' lives, what's happened to them or what they were involved with, how now this has turned into and developed into a service, an organization called Connect Our Kids. How this all fits together in a puzzle is just unbelievable. But it's my pleasure from Houston, Texas tonight to welcome you all here, Jennifer Jacobs and Jessica Stern. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, Jennifer, where are you located at right now?
I'm in Falls Church, Virginia.
In Virginia. And Jessica, you are?
Right down the street in Arlington.
In Arlington, Virginia. Okay, wonderful. Good to have both of you. And I just appreciate y'all being here and just the work and the way life has wired you. And Jennifer, obviously, with your military expertise, I would have probably won a $100 bet with you years ago if I said, hey, one of these days you're going to be doing this, and you're going to say, no way, how much you want to bet, because of how God puts things together. And Jessica, I think you turning what's happened to you, and we're going to hear that story, into how you're going to help other people is just a beautiful picture. I appreciate you being here. Tell me, and whoever wants to go first, it doesn't matter, what are you passionate about and what gets you up every morning wanting to go to work and to help kids? Jennifer.
Yeah, thank you, Greg. So I've always liked to solve problems. And you mentioned my background, which obviously leads to child welfare. It's common with engineers in child welfare, as you know. And there is, in fact, a lot of overlap. And so the things that took me into math and science and the Army and nuclear and Homeland Security, all those things, business consulting as well, were about solving problems a lot of the time. I like to do it using data and technology. And when I actually got into this field, because 10 years ago, I read an article about foster care. And it wasn't the first article I had read, but it talked about something that was working in foster care. And I love that. I love things that work in fields that are really difficult. We call them in the homeland and national security fields, we call them wicked problems. So many of the difficulties in child welfare are what we would call wicked problems. They're not, the solutions aren't clear. But when there's something that works, I like to make it work better. I like to make it work more, bigger. And so that's what we're doing. It was an approach in which in foster care, instead of kind of hoping and praying for a miracle to walk in the door in the form of strangers who want to adopt maybe an angry teenager, which is a tough sell. Instead, the approach was to take that child or youth and look outward from the child and say, who knows this child? Who has a connection to this child? Who could love this child? Let's get those people involved. That makes sense to me. That's logical. I like things that are logical. And it immediately started me thinking about a lot of the things I'd done in the national security space and in Homeland Security, where links and nodes and connections and trees are a lot of what's important. In fact, in the intelligence community, I had seen links and nodes software that is really smooth at building out terrorist networks and families. And I thought, well, surely we'll use this to help our own children in this country, right? We would do that, right? And so I started calling up a lot of the organizations, the dedicated, amazing social workers that do this work, that were doing this work 10 years ago, doing it manually. And I said, you're going to automate this, right? You're going to use software and you're going to mine the internet and you're going to, and they were like, no, what? We don't have time. We don't have time to do that, to figure that out. So that just started. You said, what gets you up? What's your passion? That just lit my passion on fire for this, because There's a lot of really hard things about child welfare, but this isn't it.
Yeah.
Peace, finding information about families, building family trees out, connecting children to their families and to supporters. That doesn't need to be hard. That doesn't need to take a long time. That we can do something about. So okay. I just started researching, and that's what still gets me up in the morning.
Okay. And Jessica, you have a more heartstring to this business, right? To this organization. Tell me about that.
You mean the cellular DNA attachment to?
Yes.
So I'm not a scientist. I met Jennifer a few years ago, and my husband actually is a former White House fellow, and Jennifer's a White House fellow. And he said, you know, Jen Jacobs, that West Point grad nuclear scientist, wants to talk with you about your experience living in the foster care with a foster family. And I was like, oh, well, we don't talk about that in our family. But if you ever get to meet a White House fellow, you never miss an opportunity to go meet with them. So I met with Jennifer for lunch one afternoon, and it changed my life. It was a lunch that turned into a 6-hour conversation about the American foster care system. And I was never in the foster care system, but I did live with a foster family, and it changed my life. Jennifer told me about this time, this article on Time Magazine, and how we can do this smart platform. We can make it look like Facebook and work like Ancestry.com. And I was like, this sounds amazing. Go do that. My foster family was amazing. Jennifer, you're awesome. Go do that. But I did not think that I wanted to move back into that space of family separation. I was separated from my siblings when I was 10. I can promise you, you'd never get over that at a cellular, and it's in your DNA. You can't get over being separated from those that you love the most. And when she told me that children in foster care were diagnosed with PTSD at twice the rate as returning war veterans, that got my attention.
Run that by again, because that just went zoop right over most people.
It literally stopped me in my tracks. I was like, Jennifer, this is great. I'm going to have a lunch and raise some money for you. Good luck. And she's like, you do know that foster children are diagnosed with PTSD at twice the rate as returning war veterans. And I was like, I did not know that. But now I felt a relief, to be honest. I thought I was unique. I thought I was suffering in silence by myself. I thought I was a weak link, to be perfectly honest. When she said that we have 20,000 kids annually aging out of the system and they don't even know they have PTSD or trauma-related issues, I was like, oh, okay, well, now I got to do something. So that's how I got involved. I had a beautiful foster family who they remain with me to this day. But the fact of the matter is, if you don't know your family and your family history and the generational trauma that's passed down, it's very difficult to heal. And family conversations are important. And it's also very important, I think, for our country and everybody in our country to recognize is that if we are at this level with 500,000 children in the foster care system every single year, there's a lot of children suffering from PTSD. And we have to do something about that. And we talk to children who've aged out of the system, who are adults now, that were placed in 7, 10, 12, 15 different homes. Like that's not going to help with the trauma situation. And so I told Jen, hey, let me interview some people and let's see if this technology platform that you want to build is a good idea. And one of the first people I spoke to was a social worker on the West Coast. She had a young girl in her care, 11 years in her care, 11 years in foster care. This little girl, for her 11th birthday, just requested that she might have knowledge or meet one person in her bio family. Can you imagine that's your request at 11? Her social worker is amazing. She's a Connect Our Kids advisor now. She went out and got a special grant to do a very special family finding program. Not everybody in this country, not every jurisdiction, not every social worker gets a family finding program, just ones jurisdictions that can afford it. Well, this particular social worker said, I'm going to go out and get a special grant because by God, we're going to find somebody for her birthday. It took months to get that grant, Greg, months, but she got it. And she sat down around a big table and she built out a family tree for this little girl. And they found 38 family members within a 50-mile radius, and not a one knew she had ever been born. Now, yeah. on the bright side, because we know she's not going to get over that trauma, we shouldn't say she's going to have a difficult time getting over that trauma. But on the bright side, she is with her father now, and she is with 38 family members that love her. And that social worker confirmed the fact that we can, in fact, scale up the family finding process. It shouldn't take months to do this work. These people need the tools to do this work at hand. And I will say this, I learned a lot by doing all this research with Jen. One of the first things we found out was, yes, this needs to exist, but child welfare professionals are legally required to reach out to the extended family. This reduces the trauma of placing them with strangers. But so many child welfare professionals don't have access to tools that just are helpful in finding, you know, extended family, finding contact information, et cetera. So that's one of the stories that helped build that baseline of the family connections tool. And the second piece of the tool, which is just so critical, it not only helps find families and contact information, but there's a team component. And the reason there's a team component is because there was a little boy in the East Coast, and this little boy was 8 years old living in a group home. He went through three social workers. His fourth child welfare professional is a very specialized family recruiter, the family recruiters that this technology was created because of. This family recruiter got a file this thick, 4 inches paper. And this paper file, she found a post-it note. And on the post-it note, it was just a number. These family recruiters that do this specialized work, there are about 9 programs in the country. They're literally, these people are like private detectives. They really just go through every inch of the file to try to find a thread, a family member that they can call. Well, this particular post-it note had a phone number. The family recruiter calls it. And on the other line is this aunt weeping. And she said, I've been trying to find Brian for 3 years. And she said, he's in a group home. This kid is 8. At this point, the state had written him off as unadopted. He just couldn't be adopted, right? Well, that's not true. And what we found out by doing this research and talking to this amazing family recruiter is that if you build a smart tech platform that gives teams the ability to share this information, if somebody gets sick, if somebody gets, you know, decides they want to quit or wins the lottery, that information that they compile does not have to be lost in a paper file. And so that's, I feel like part of this, this work has been so exciting, is that the family recruiters that do this work are sharing their best practices so we could build this technology that would then share it with the next person that's coming in. And one of the really cool things that our tech development team did was they built this app. And the reason that they built this app for social workers and family recruiters is because of a little boy named Christopher. I shouldn't say he's a little boy. I'm a mother, so I think all children are my children. He is aging out of the system in Florida a couple years ago. Aging out of the system in America, folks, that is beyond challenging. These youth, 14 to 24 is when they start to age out. They start prepping these kids to age out of the system. Aging out of the system means you don't get any financial assistance. You don't get support. You're on your own. This system is a pipeline to homelessness, human trafficking, and prison. So what happens is they get out of the system, and where are they going to go? Mm-hmm. And so we learned about this young man in Florida who was aging out at 18. His social worker picked him up on his birthday because the foster family was no longer getting paid to take care of him. He was out. So she picks him up. She takes him down the street and says, he says, where am I going? And she said, well, I have to take you to the homeless shelter across town. And he said, what are my other choices? And she replied, I could drop you off at the gas station every time. I can't even tell the story. But the social worker, this poor social worker doesn't have any options, right? She can't adopt all the children that are in her case files. It's impossible. So she drops him off at the gas station because that is what he chose. But guess what? This app right now that every child welfare professional in the country can download for free, because the next time they have a kid in the car, they have the choice to take them to a homeless shelter. They can start doing family finding right here. They might not get the first 10 people on the phone to say, yes, I'll take an 18-year-old and let him live on my spare room. But the odds are, if they make enough phone calls, they will. They will find plenty of people ready to stand up and help. And so I just want to say that our technology platform, yes, it was Jennifer's brilliant idea, because she is a genius, and she is one of the most loving women I've ever met. But the fact of the matter is, this platform was designed and built by family recruiters around the country, CASA volunteers, family recruiters, Wendy's Wonderful Kids, family finders, P3 workers, people that do this very specialized work, guided every bit of this technology.
Unbelievable. Tell you what, we're going to take our first break. That was unbelievable. I knew this was going to be this kind of program where we're just going to just soak this all in. On the other side of this first commercial break, I want to find out what's broken with the system real briefly, because there's no reason to talk about the brokenness when we have the repair. And then how can people get involved in this Connect Our Kids program? Can somebody like me that, you know, just in Houston that works at a hospital, can I get involved, and how can I? And we're going to find out more about that and more about this program. 888-627-6008. We have hundreds of thousand children that are walking the streets tonight with PTSD because they didn't have a place to be put after they got out of foster care. What's wrong with our country? And we're going to find out the answer to that on the other side of the break. Hang with us. We'll be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the VBS Radio Network. Okay, welcome back. We have just some wonderful Jennifer and Jessica here tonight that's talking about Connect Our Kids and this technology, this software. And Jennifer, without going into great depths because of time, because it's so complicated, and I actually got to see a version of this on the screen. It just like, wow. How did this come about? What was this technology being used for before you ever decided, hey, wait, why are we using this with kids that need to find out who their families are? What was it being used for?
So the software that you saw, Greg, previously was custom built for this purpose. But the concept of this software is used for a number of different purposes. I had seen something like this used to map out terrorist networks and connections, because it's essentially a links and nodes software. And we've integrated an internet mining feature that sucks in information about the family and relevant connections so that social workers can reach out and make contact. So many times we hear stories from social workers about how a child's been in, for instance, Marcus is a child who was recently helped by our software. He's in Florida. He'd been in foster care for most of his life, in and out of foster care since he was two. He's a teenager now. His social worker was afraid he was going to age out and face the probabilities that Jessica mentioned earlier, that he would end up homeless, he would end up incarcerated, he would become a victim or face early death. So she reached out and got access to our software. She just started running the information that she had through to find people. She started calling them and emailing them. It turns out he had lots of relatives and family supporters. And within a short period of time, five relative families stepped up and said, we would like him to join our family. So it isn't that people aren't willing. It isn't that people won't. It's that oftentimes they don't know. They're not even aware a child has been born, as Jessica talked about with the child Sophie earlier. So this software addresses the issue of data being enormous. And so data filtering is what's needed, select data, and organization and visualization of that tool. It's a technology tool that simply takes what our human brains can do, but it just does it faster because we have to sort through a lot of data. And frankly, social workers don't have the time for that. The right. Very best social workers, the very best of intentions, doing their very best work and working more hours than they're even paid for, they can't do everything that they're asked to do. The government is not a good parent. The government is not supposed to raise children. And so, of course, that doesn't work well. So if a child's parents are just not able to raise that child for whatever reason, the community, it takes a village, right? So the community, generally, from a person, from a humanity perspective, the family, the neighbors, the church, those around, they would step up. And in just the way that our lives are these days, the way that the world is, those kind of natural communities don't really exist anymore as much until we help shape them. So in the simplest sense, this technology tool is almost like creating the community around the child and reaching out and bringing it to the child.
I was a foster parent. And matter of fact, we lived in my boys and my wife and I lived in a foster home, a group home where six teenage boys lived with us. And I was very, I'm very familiar with how overloaded all of these caseworkers are. They're just trying to find, and then when we moved out of that situation to our own homes with our three boys, I think we had three teenage boys that came to live with us during foster care too. And they were just looking for literally a warm body. Will you take this child? You know, and that was about the best placement that we got. And then trying to hook them up with their own parents just for visits was a nightmare. Christmases and Thanksgivings where we would love to have them be with us, but wouldn't it be nice to be with your family? Is this the kind of program that can ease the pressure off the social workers of trying to find somebody that can at least take them for after background checks and protection checks and all that for a visit, for weekend visits, for holiday visits? Can it be something as simple as that to tie them in to blood instead of just a stranger that they don't know?
Yes, exactly. So one of the things that this software can do is it takes what a lot of social workers tell us they wish they could do, that they desperately want to do, which is build a large support system around the child, whether it's for adoption, whether it's for weekend visits, whether it's just to take them to soccer practice and cheer real loud, whatever it's for, build a community around that child. And that, if you're going to do it manually, takes an enormous amount of time. Our software, one social worker told us that it took a 7 days worth of work and did it in 30 seconds for him.
Wow.
So imagine that.
Yeah.
Take that burden of just that. Social workers don't go into social work in order to scour the internet for emails and phone numbers. They go into social work to help people. So we're trying to take that burden of that work, scouring the internet, finding information, organizing it, keeping track of it, and let them get their time back to help people, to help children and families.
And isn't the overall purpose of what you all are doing, like Georgette spoke the other night, and I think she's with us too tonight, is to get the children to some normalcy, to help deal with their own trauma of saying, hey, yeah, that's my uncle, that's my family, even though whatever situation put them in that foster care system, that breaks down possibly and it heals or prevents what Jessica was talking about, this PTSD as a long-term effects.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've worked with a lot of trauma experts who are using our technology right now just as a life book. Some very special social workers and family recruiters try to take the time to create these life books for youth, which helps map out all the foster families that they lived with and all of their family members, because what that does is it heals trauma. If you know who your people are and you understand your history, you're able to process that much faster than you are if you age out of the system and you're 20 years trying to figure out what happened. How am I alone? Like, where are my people? Because everybody has a family. Now, you might not want to go to Christmas with everybody. You might not want to be invited to Thanksgiving with that crazy uncle. But guess what? You want to know who the uncle is. Yep. You do. And it just is very, it's a very, very healing process. And one of the things we learned in our pilot was that a lot of these social workers are using this technology to do things we didn't even anticipate. Building out support networks are at-risk families, people who are at risk of being pulled into the foster care system, where they're organizing support around the families. And that's amazing. We've recently met with four human trafficking organizations that are interested in building a program around our technology that would allow those, and I'm going to call them kids, they're youth, but 80%, is it 80%, Jen, of youth trafficked in human trafficking, they have been touched by the foster care system. So we have this crazy pipeline, and you know, people always talk about human trafficking at the border and all these things, and that's a problem. Yes, don't get me wrong, that's a problem. And let's take a look at the foster care system, because if we are seeing this, we can stop it. If we know it's happening, now we know we can do something about that. And so what's exciting about this last year is we have seen child welfare professionals and trauma experts come to us and say, can we do this? And we're like, oh yes, hold on. Let's call our tech guy, Travis, and see how much money that's going to cost. Because every time we get a request, we obviously work to funding. And so once the request is made, if it's high enough on the list, Jen will say, okay, let's knock this out. We just got a $25,000 grant from the Sauer Family Foundation or whatever foundation that it supports us. So it's exciting.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, so our software, our mission as a 501c3 nonprofit is to build software that ought to exist for the child welfare field. And then we give it away for free to professionals and cleared volunteers who will use it to help children and families. So we raise our money philanthropically. We do not charge our users who in the child welfare field who are using it to help children. Our goal is that the cost of our software should never be a barrier between a child and his or her family.
Beautiful.
So that means that we cannot charge for the software. But it does mean that, of course, software doesn't build itself.
Right. So, and you know, I'm so glad we're going here because I've never done this in a year and a half, but I'm going to do it tonight. Everybody that's listening right now that's involved with a Rotary Club, a church, an organization, a Lions Club, anything, or just you as individuals, ought to look, connect our kids up, and consider giving them $10 a month, $50 a month, $1,000 a month, something, because most of us are going to go back after the show, turn on our TV, and forget about it. And that's not the way it needs to be. America's better than that. We need to reach down and just say, okay, I can only do this. And I've never, and if you know me, I've never done this before, but I personally think this is free. And it's your way of being able to help children that's going to be walking the streets one day soon if we don't. And this can help them and save generations, can it not? This can break the cycle.
This can break the cycle. Yeah, 100%. Thank you. Do I have a feedback? Sorry. I wanted to also share, thank you so much. And we really appreciate that. We have about 900 unique donors. Some people give $10 a month. We have one CASA volunteer in Texas, by the way, who donates $20 a month. And we're so grateful for her. She's wonderful. Texas CASA is an amazing organization that really focuses on these the family tree. And they really work hard to do that. CASA is great anyways. But one of the things, too, that we learned in the pilot, along with our independent living programs, Greg, is every state has an independent living program, and that's ages 14 to 24, depending on the state. And what they do is they really focus on the hard skills. How do you get a job? How do you build a resume? You know, try to help these kids with a little bit of information before they age out of the system. And what we have really been excited about is building out a set of video content that will just be another set of tools that will go and be paired along with the Family Connections tool. And these trauma-informed videos are being developed by trauma experts that are donating their time. Dr. Linda Karvovac, Samantha Stevelton, Beth Tyson, all of these trauma experts are building out this content that will soon be given to youth that are in independent living programs to help them understand their brain, understand what trauma does to our brain, understand how family connections, knowing our family history, helps heal that. And then alongside of their life coach or child welfare expert, they will then be able to use our family connections tool to engage their own family, to call the grandma who may or may not know they exist and say, hello, this is who I am, and I could use a little help right now. And wow, we're just terribly excited about this opportunity to help these youth and put a focus on the kids that are 14 to 24. And I know they're not kids, but I'm going to say it because my son will always be my kid.
That's right.
Always.
On the other side of this last break, I want to dig a little deeper into that. Matter of fact, anything you need me to do for video is free for you. I would love to tape and do everything. I got that, my new book that's coming out for kids, and it would be every one of the foster kids come out and need that book.
Awesome.
How to deal with this kind of, these kind of emotions. But
Oh, that's brilliant. Perfect.
On the other side of this last break, I want to dig into a little bit of that trauma that goes through with what we talked about with Georgette a few weeks ago, and how if they don't have what you're trying to provide to them, that connection, what can it do to them? So we're going to talk more about that. If you want to get involved, 888-627-6008. We'd love to have your comments, your input, your questions, or get on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page, and Curtis is right there. We'll be right back after this last commercial break with Jessica and Jennifer. Don't leave us.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All righty. Thank you, Doug. I tell you what, we do have a question or a comment. My son's going to be coming on. So, Kurt, Jennifer, I told you he would come on. My Army son. How, son? I like your hat. Welcome. What kind of comment or question or anything you want to share with Jessica and Jennifer right now?
Well, we have a lot of people asking about the app on Facebook right now. And one of the biggest questions is this platform only accessible by social workers, or can a foster child create their own profile as well?
Ooh.
Yeah, we have first of all, these are wonderful questions. Yes, we're excited about the app that all child welfare professionals can download. We have had a lot of interest in letting youth build out their own family tree and being able to access our platform. Jennifer and I have had a dozen conversations about this. We really want to accelerate belonging and connection and permanency. We do not want to accelerate rejection. And so that is why these trauma-informed videos that our experts are building out right now are going to help these youth understand and how to heal, how to deal with rejection. We've all been rejected. I've been rejected a million times. I mean, that's everything. But when you are a kid and you are suffering from trauma and you are on a very, you're in fight or flight at most of the time, it's that rejection can be crushing. And that is what we are really working to do. So the answer to that, in short, is no, not right now. This is for child welfare professionals. And also, we are working hard to build out this trauma-informed video content that can be paired along with this family connections tool to help youth go through it.
Would there be anything wrong with the foster child asking their caseworker, have you heard of this program, this app? Can you get access to it? Would that be proper?
That would be proper.
Okay, good. Okay. Curtis, there's a couple coming in through the chat. You want to share those? You see those?
We got, if you could make one major change to transform the foster care system, what would you propose?
Wow. Who wants that one?
So I always answer this question by saying the change I would make is that every child in foster care would be treated the way you would like your own child to be treated if they were in foster care. And that will answer every question that you have.
It's so true. It's 100% true. And I would add to that, Every child welfare professional by law must reach out to the extended family. Use this free resource and do that. And then the money the government saves on this kind of resources, because we're saving the government money here, we're giving this away for free, give those social workers a raise. They have our children and they are taking care of them, and they need to sit with those children and their families and focus on healing the trauma, because the trauma is what put them in there in the first place, and poverty, and then other things we can talk about later. But I'm adding to Jennifer's list.
You know,
give them a raise.
With the children that I've been involved with, that there was much trauma work done. It was more medication.
Yes.
Take another pill.
Yes.
I remember taking them to the doctors all the time, and doctors were waiting in line to have the foster kids because they knew that there was a money. And I'm not trying to slam that, but there was a pipeline to money from the government if I have this child to pump medicine. But
yeah, that's
not
right.
The answer.
No, it's not the answer, Greg. It's honestly, my sister's a social worker and had one of my sisters. I have amazing siblings. All seven of them are awesome. One of them is probably responsible for keeping me around a long time. But every time I would go to a new psychologist or doctor, they would give me prescriptions, and I would take it home and show my sister, this is what they gave me this time. And she's like, don't do it. You can do this work. And she would work through me, you know, for 20 years, we've been working this through. But they do. It's because it's an easy fix. Let's face it. You've got each child welfare professional. Let's say you have 23 cases. Like, my God, it's overwhelming. So it's like this cycle.
There's just not time of the day.
Yeah, there's a place for medication if that's what's appropriate. But
yes.
Medication alone almost never solves the issues that are being addressed. Children with disabilities and special needs are overrepresented in foster care, along with Native Americans, Black Americans. And so there is a need to actually, in the case of children with special needs, put a lot of time into what their needs are, whether that need is that they've been traumatized and that they need to work through that, or whether that need is that they have diagnosable special needs of other types. There's just a lot of work that needs to be put in by someone who cares. That person is usually called a parent.
Yeah.
And so foster children, almost by definition, are voiceless and without that key supporter because they don't have that parent. Now, if they're lucky enough to have you, Greg, as a foster parent,
yeah,
then they're a heck of a lucky foster kid. And we've run into some foster parents who treat those children that they're fostering the same as they would their own. They go to bat for them. They fight for them. But it's just all too rare that that's the case, whether it's the choice or whether it's a bandwidth issue or a resource issue. That's not what most foster kids get. So without someone who's in their corner 100% of the time, children with disabilities and special needs do not get the kind of support that they need. And a medication alone will never solve their problems.
Mm-mm.
Curtis, is there anything else on online or that you're hearing?
No, but I kind of have a quick question because I'm a recruiter right now for the Army, so I deal with some people having foster kids and stuff like that. And for some odd reason, and I hope this is not inappropriate, but I've noticed that some foster parents are dealing with a lot of grief from the state if they want to have multiple foster kids. Is that something you guys have seen or dealt with, or is there any way around to fix that?
So foster care is interesting because I've worked much of my adult life in various bureaucracies, and foster care is often managed at the county level, which means it is bureaucracy in several thousand parts. And so So that's one of the things that makes it quite interesting and quite complicated. But to answer your question, at the county level or at the state level, there can be a variety of rules around how many foster children or youth can be in a home. And that can vary just by what jurisdiction they're in. Of course, it's an attempt to try to make sure that there aren't 20 kids living in a home when that isn't reasonable to support. You know, just like any bureaucratic rule, it doesn't always serve the best interests.
Right. You know, This just came to me, and I don't know if this is proper or not either. I'm like Curtis, that's where he gets it from. I'm not for sure if it's appropriate. I was just thinking, wouldn't it, if the parent was in a position to where they could not emotionally, financially, because of abuse or whatever, take care of their child, wouldn't they be an advocate of saying, I at least want this type of system to get them where they are going to get the best care? I can't imagine, and Kurt, I know you couldn't either, can't imagine that losing your one-year-old Karina to a system where you wasn't able to take care of this young daughter and then it being put into a home of just a warm body. That's not the trauma that the biological parent is going through on top of whatever problems they're having has to just multiply tenfold at least.
Yeah, I think that if you talk to people who've been in this, working in the system for many, many years, I've talked to everybody, and I take a lot of notes. A lot of the drivers are poverty. And the idea that you're going to take let me just preface this really quick because I know this people are going to be like, there are children that need to be removed from their immediate family because the people are mentally ill, because they are on drugs. They're doing really terrible, awful things. Get those kids out of there. Yes.
Yes.
And also, what we as a country need to start looking at as poverty. If a mother is working three jobs to keep food on the table, but she leaves her children at home in that house without a babysitter because she can't afford it, she's trying to keep the lights on. We shouldn't take her children, pardon me. We shouldn't separate her children from her. What we should do is go in and wrap support around her and get her that babysitter and give her the support, because not all parents that are losing their children are bad. I know there are a lot of parents out there that are fighting the system. There are people in the state of Washington right now with a class action lawsuit. There's a lot going on in this system. And we're humans. We can do better. When you know better, we can do better. And we know better.
Yeah, well, I agree.
I'll add that a lot of times fathers are left out and are discounted. So in Minnesota, one of the amazing states that was one of our pioneer users, a girl named Sarah she was in foster care, had no contact with her father, her father's whole father's side of the family. It was like they didn't exist, like they'd never existed, which is a biological impossibility. Mm-hmm. So her social worker started using our software, having just the father's name and the state. They quickly found his Facebook page, quickly found his contact information, contacted him. He very much wanted to be involved. And from the father, then they were able to find a whole bunch of paternal relatives, and a number of those became very involved.
That's
so
great.
When social workers discount the family, discount the father's side of the family, you lose a whole enormous network of people who can be supporters. And yes, generally speaking, if a child can be kept within the family or what they call kin, which means family, friends, and strong supporters of the family, then there's not as much trauma because there's not as much of a break. There's not as much of an extraction from what they know. And if you're a child, if you can't live with your parents, if you can go and live with someone who knew your parents, who knows your parents, who knew your grandmother, who shares a great grandfather with you, then you've still got a connection. They've got pictures up in their home that matter to you as well. And they may even, if you struggle with a mental health disorder, and maybe that's part of what's put your family in a difficult position, maybe you struggle with ADHD or bipolar disorder as a youth, maybe they're not so unfamiliar with that. That's not so scary to them. Oh yeah, grandma had that too. We know about that.
Yeah.
So you're not this scary youth that they're letting into the home. Yeah. It's someone that you know. It's someone that you're connected to. And that goes both ways. So it makes a lot of sense to keep people within a network or at least connected to that network.
Absolutely, I agree. And we're down to about 35, 45 seconds. Anything, I want people to know how to get in touch with y'all. What would be the best way to get in touch when they want to help? And everybody listening is going to help. Well, how do they get in touch with you?
connectourkids.org. Go there and donate. If you cannot donate, make an introduction to somebody who can introduce our tools to a child welfare professional. Please let child welfare professionals know they don't need to sign a contract. They don't need to commit to Connect Our Kids, but they can try our technology for free and it will help a child.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jennifer and Jessica, for being here tonight. Curtis, I love you to death. Thank you for being here. I appreciate the work that you're doing, the way you're doing it, and the heart that's in it because of the way you've been wired in life and with your occupational life and everything else. You're turning it into something that's impacting lives, hundreds and thousands of people's lives that you'll never know until sometime in heaven when they say, look at this crowd. These are the people that they helped. And it's going to be beautiful. Thank you so much for your hearts.
God bless you. Thank you so much.
And anything I can do for you, let me know, and we'll be glad to have you. We're going to have you back, too, so we can finish this conversation. Next week, we have Adrian Ruan, the domestic abuse specialist and TEDx talk speaker, and she's going to be awesome. But as we finish every show each week, always like to indicate that no matter what's been going on in your life, no matter what's happening right now, I want to let you know there's always hope. There's always hope. Never give up on hope. I want to thank our guests again tonight. Be with us next week at 8 o'clock Central Time, live from Houston, Texas, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Get on Connect Our Kids right now. God bless. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.